Harry Chapin was one of the greatest storytellers of all time.
He wanted to change the world. And he did.
Thanks so much for taking the time to talk to me. I appreciate it. I'm covering the San Diego Film Festival. And I saw this, and it was only at the drive-in. And I was like, I can't get to the drive-in, but I love Harry Chapin. So they did get me a screener. And I've been doing some research online and looking, and I was curious if it was a deliberate choice when you were deciding the angle for the story to kind of make it flow through the connections of all the people that Harry has touched through his life.
Oh, it was absolutely exactly the way I wrote it, and better, because we were able to not only get great interviews from Billy and all everyone, Billy Joel and Pat Benatar and all the great people from Why Hunger, Noreen, Springsteen, and so forth. So it really turned out better. But the angle for me right from the start was to go down two tracks at the same time, because Harry was unique than any other music icon. Not that he's an icon, but music artist documentary, because he was a music artist, but he was so much more than that. So you have to tell, you know, both stories. And so the challenge for this film was to, you know, tell both stories and do it evenly and head down that, those parallel tracks.
Well, one of the things that I like about documentaries is because they always give you like a 360 view of the person if they can. Mm-hmm. And it's clear that the family was really involved in this. So when you were sitting down, I'm assuming with Sandy, and trying to decide of the footage, was this a accumulation of things that she had versus other people? And how did you kind of decide, once you were digging through that, what you wanted to use? Because it seems like a lot.
Yeah. Well, you know, Sandy wasn't really involved in selecting what we selected. She said, we have a closet full of footage and pictures and at their, what they call the Chapin office, which is run by one of our co-producers. And we dug through everything. Sandy did not see this film until a week ago. In the Hamptons Film Festival.
Really?
So, yeah, I presented her with my original treatment and the angle I wanted to take, and she thought it was great. And we filmed her that first day before we even signed an agreement or anything. And she doesn't like to do, she doesn't like to be filmed. And she spent a great deal of time with us, and we only filmed her once, and that's what you see in the film.
Oh, nice. Well, I mean, it had this nice touch of continuity. And so I knew who Harry Chapin was because of Harry Belafonte. That was my introduction to it because, my older brother, my oldest brother would get in trouble and you would just hear this like guitar coming out of his room. And I'd go in the car, I'm like, what is wrong with Roger? She's like, he's doing his hair. It's fine. He's doing it. I was like, what is happening? So like when he would get in trouble with my dad, he'd go play Cat's Cradle. And I was like, my brother trolled before trolling was a thing.
That's a great story.
I mean, that's one of the reasons why when I saw it pop on the list, I'm like, I have to see what this is about, because like the other reference I have for this was the 1981 cover by a hip hop group of Cats in the Cradle. And that's how I heard it first. And then, so when I heard the original, I was like, this is so much better with the guitar. Cause I'm a little black girl. What do I know?
Did you notice that we had that Cats in the Cradle rap in the film?
Yes. Yes.
We didn't know about that. We interviewed, Daryl McDaniels at BMC for the film. He's just a terrific guy. And we had a great interview with him. And we were just like going back and forth. And he said, hey, have you guys ever seen this, this clip of, he told us the story about the battles. In fact, we have it on tape, but we didn't include it in the film because it was a little too in the weeds. But he talks about how, he saw this battle happening and they were using in the Bronx and they were using Cats in the Cradle, and someone captured it on camera, which is amazing to me, right? There were no cell phones in 1981.
Right.
And it was unbelievable. And we put it in the film. And Dee gave it to us, you know, at that, said, look, this, here it is. And we went and we found it. And
That was fantastic when I saw it pop up. I'm like, hey. Yeah.
So I don't know if I answered your question, but what was your original question? Because we got off track. Because I was so shocked that you that was the first time that you heard Cats in the Cradle. That is mind-blowing to me. That's great.
Yeah, well, you know, my parents really like music, and they tried to introduce us to all sorts of different kinds. Plus, I grew up on a military base when I was really young in a predominantly white neighborhood. Mm-hmm. So a lot of the concerts and people who you would get to come to the school would be people like Harry Chapin.
Sure.
And so in theory, I'm relatively certain I had heard the very beginning part, but I'm pretty sure I only heard it as the poem. I'd never heard the song.
Right.
So, yeah. So my actual introduction to it was through hip hop. And I was like, I'm a little left of center. And that's one of the reasons why I really wanted to interview you. When you looked at this from the perspective of all the different people who he touched. And right. He was very much so bigger than just a musician. He could have been as big as the bigs, but he was more focused on this other mission that he got. And I really thought that was an interesting way to kind of always stick to the subject and then use his music through that, because it gave a very different perspective of how you looked about being a participant in the process, about what it means to be a citizen activist. And in this day and age, where people are really quick to say, shut up and dribble, shut up and sing, or, you know, I thought it was really an interesting angle to blend in and out of his life and into his politics, so to speak.
Yeah. Well, you know, we purposely wanted to release the film right now because the country is just so divided. Mm-hmm. And what Harry shows us is that activism works. You know, you wake up in the middle of this pandemic and, you know, you realize that what Harry and Bill Ayers created and Sandy Chapin created back in 1975 are saving and changing lives today in the middle of a pandemic 45 years later. And to me, that's what jumped off the screen about Harry. I mean, I knew Harry came to my high school in 1974 as a junior in high school. So my experience with Harry was he came into the school. School was packed in the middle of the day during lunch hour. And he started singing and talking about hunger and poverty. And so for me, I got that message, you know, at that point in time, that if you, you know, really want something bad and you really care about something and you have empathy, that you can change the world. And Harry did that. I mean, in by all stretch of the imagination, I mean, look at the people that he turned on with the We Are the World, which, you know, was USA for Africa and Live Aid. And, you know, the fact that his three organizations are, you know, still going and unfortunately still have to go even further. And so he really was more than a music artist. He didn't just play music and do a benefit concert. He really got his hands dirty. He dug into the root causes of poverty or the root causes of hunger, which is poverty, and, you know, and worked on fixing that. So, you know, to me, both are important. The music is important, you know, and we try to, every scene has one of his songs in it.
Yeah.
So, you know, we keep the music alive.
Well, he was a particular kind of singer-songwriter, and I think that's also of added value today, especially with like a resurgence to, you know, activist music or singer-songwriters not just giving their songs to bigger known stars. Like, I didn't know the song that Pat Benatar sang that I love was written by Harry Chapin until it came up when she was singing it. And like, then you realize the connection that he has to Billy Joel, and you realize the connection that he has. And like, I don't know what it is about every single man that if you really want to find out if they're legit, they have gotten one priest to be their best friend at some point in their lives.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm Catholic. And when I was younger, one of the things that we did is we would donate to the Y for Hunger facilities that were in North Carolina where I lived. I'd never made the connection to Harry Chapin until I'm watching it on the screen. Yeah. And it was just this kind of this indelible thing that he had, that before he opened his mouth to speak, he made sure he knew what he was talking about. So it was that much more difficult to delegitimize him as just, you know, a singer who, you know, who like has a savior complex. You really showed him as someone who, even though he had all this kinetic energy and he was going, he had thoughtfulness behind him. And I think that's something that kind of gets lost without his music. So to have him talking to the students for the high school footage that you had in there, and then have that transition over to him singing a song out of, I think it was like Taxi. And then another moment, it's like, it gives you these different touchstones for people to come in and get this message. And then you flip it around and you realize, oh, wait, yeah, no, they talked to Martin Luther King, and it was the same thing about the poverty and the poor people's movement at that point in time. So how difficult was it to kind of balance those things when you really have someone, when you get into their philanthropy, is such a like threaded throughout who they are and what they do?
Well, Harry was very, very prolific. He was very complex, and he was brilliant. He was just brilliant. And behind him, or on the side of him, was Sandy. Mm-hmm. And you know, Sandy is brilliant on her own. You know, went to Harvard and got her, you know, PhD at Columbia. She's amazing on her own, and the two of them together were dynamic. And they decided that they were going to stick to one cause. That Sandy told Harry and Bill that whatever it is, they were coming out of the 60s, what's next, you know? Mm-hmm. And she was the one, along with Harry, who just came back from Ethiopia doing a benefit concert. Doing a documentary. So he was exposed to extreme hunger. And, you know, they decided to stick with that because his feeling was, their collective feeling was, that hunger and poverty is kind of the root of all our ills, if you look at it. Racial injustice. It's, you know, even climate change affects what's happening with the pandemic affects poor people more, so on and so forth. So they recognize that, you know, right away. And, you know, you talk about him knowing the topic. When he went to Washington and was on the presidential commission, he never missed a meeting. He could be out in California, you know, doing a concert and fly to D.C., fly back to California in the same day to make that meeting. He never missed a meeting. He knew more than the politicians. And
he cared. You know,
that's right. And Carter recognized that. And it was bipartisan. That was the thing. When you see that, you see a very conservative Bob Dole, and you see, you know, Senator Leahy, who's a, you know, a liberal Democrat, and you see them coming together because of Harry.
Yeah.
That's like, in today's world, that's crazy.
No, that almost knocked me over. I'm like, this is some deep fake footage. That's a lie. Yeah. That did not happen. Yeah. But that's the kind of thing that I'm talking about. It's like when you're looking at trying to figure out how do you navigate a world that wants to pretend like everything is siloed, to realize, I'm realizing as I watch more documentaries now that are talking about a few steps forward in history than we usually focus documentaries on. And that's where Harry kind of falls into. I'm starting to realize that we had people who were screaming from the rooftops the issue that we needed to focus on, because you said it in the documentary, and I really appreciate that you left that in there. It's like, we have a failure. We don't have a failure of food. We have a failure. We have a world that can feed itself. Right. And, you know, and then kind of that is the frame that you gave to how Harry would then, all the rest of the footage talked about it. And it was a nice blend between when you gave footage versus you gave us a voiceover. So when you were making the calls between when you were going to do like an in-person video interview, or you were going to use some audio footage and kind of overlay it with imaging. I wanted to say, what was kind of your process, but that seems like a really simple
sure.
or something that seems complicated.
We had every interview that Bill did of Harry on Bill's radio show. Mm-hmm. We had, I want to say, about 34 interviews over, you know, from 1974 until maybe a year before Harry died. So we had all of that. And it's and the incredible thing, when I heard it for the first time, I did not know it existed. Bill had it and gave us an old cassette of it, and we digitized it and saved it. Listening to it was, it should be released, I think, someday on like a master class on hunger and poverty and what to do about it, because they were talking about things on that radio show in 1975, 76, 77, and kind of predicting where we are in 2020. Like, Harry was really, really concerned that as the 60s turned into the 70s and was turning into the 80s, he was concerned about greed. He was concerned about and music changing to being, you know, more, how do I say that, popish than having an actual
very tactful way to
say. Yeah. You know, disco wasn't his thing, you know.
Right.
You're going away from the 60s music and even some of the early 70s, and he can see that happening. It was concerned. And he says, and we have this on tape, we did not include it in the film because it would have been a non sequitur, but he says, if we keep on going like this, I'm really concerned in the 80s and the 90s, and then you get into the 2000s, he goes, by the time you get into 2010, 2015, this world is going to be unrecognizable.
Well, I mean,
and he was putting it in, you know, the pace that they were going, you know, roughly for the last 50 years, 12% of the population is below the poverty line. And is food insecure. And that, because of the pandemic, obviously has increased drastically. So he foresaw that, you know, 1% were going to make all the money and 99% were basically screwed. And he saw that happening back then. And not to get into too political about it, but you can see his transformation after Carter lost to Reagan. That's when not only did they do everything and all their great work that they did, the President's Commission, all that was now gone because Reagan got, he saw it as this is a threat to poor people, basically, you know, that we're back now. We're back to where we were when we started. And
I mean, I thought you handled it very deftly on screen around the election by going from Carter's speech and then going the next moment. I think it was his brother saying, he immediately got on a plane because he felt like he needed to go and explain to them how hunger and poverty would further the other things that they were actually caring about. And I think we need to recognize the benchmarks and those threshold moments in time. I also think we need to recognize the voices that we kind of started to decide were passé. And I think that this is the best illustration of one issue voting I've ever seen and how it kind of evolved, because his one issue was the issue everybody should care about because it's the issue from which all other issues are derived.
Correct.
And I think I think this does a really good job of kind of putting that into a different focus. And my demographic for the MTR network is mostly people of color. And we don't generally tend to get documentaries about white people, particularly folk song singers. I don't know why. Targeted or marketed to Black people. But like the only other person who I recognized, not in like a popular music setting, was the Black folk singer that you have in this documentary, Ruben. Yeah. I was like, I know him. And I was like, oh my God, he knew Harry too? Didn't know who? I don't think we should play 7 Degrees of Kevin Bacon anymore. I think it should be 7 Degrees of Harry Chapin, because I think everyone is there. So I really wanted to kind of get your thought process behind this. And I wanted to see this because when you start thinking about people, like, I think one of the prevailing problems with people who are engaged in activism now is the person who they send to speak once they've got someone's attention. Right. And whether it's by unfortunate, you know, accident or like assassination, the people who were best suited to articulate these causes seem to be gone. Like the people like Harry Chapin are gone, Fred Hampton is gone, you know, Medgar Evers is gone. And we don't really have, we have people who have the voices that we need to get people's attention, but we don't necessarily have that other person on the other side of the table who's willing to take their position and their clout and say, I'm committed. And I thought that was another unique and very interesting point that I was, that you let his brother make, that he was like, yeah, even after he agreed, you know, it wasn't enough that Carter was in agreement. He wanted him committed. And I really think that that's kind of a resonating message just in general for citizen activists and anybody who wants to kind of speak up. And I felt like this did a really good job. I was engaged and.
Wow. That's great. I, you know, one of the last question that I asked every interview that I did for Harry's film was, you know, Harry was very in the moment, right? Mm-hmm. So it begs the question, even though I don't like asking hypotheticals, but this is a great hypothetical, right? If Harry was alive today, now most of these interviews were done in 2018. The last interview I did was Sir Bob Geldof in London before the pandemic hit. So it was like January. But the last question I asked was, you know, what do you think Harry would be doing today? And back in 2018, it was what was going down on the border with children and families being locked up and all that. So, you know, a lot of people said, well, you know, Billy Joel said, well, he'd be down on the border, you know, and probably doing concerts and raising money and trying to get these kids safe. And a lot of people thought he would have went into politics. But his brother, Tom, said, I don't know, but whatever it is, he'd be in the middle of it.
Yeah.
So, you know, we turned that, you know, so what we wanted to bring out in this film, and then I'm going to take you to a slightly different place, but what we wanted to really, the point we wanted to make is that activism works. It's hard. It sucks in every way, that you have to do it. But we have to do it. And activism, and part of the reason why we wanted this film to come out now was to show that, you know, to show that when in doubt, do something, you know. So we turned that question, that final question I turned on myself and my partner, S.A. Baron, and said, okay, what would Harry be doing today? I woke up in July, I turned 63. I've got three kids and three grandchildren who are multicultural, and granddaughters, I should say. And I said, well, Harry was a documentarian and he was a musician. So he would do something and vote right now. And he would put together a concert and he would put together a documentary that outlined the issues of today that are important to people. Put aside who's running for president, you know, put all that aside, racial racial injustice, hunger and poverty, which really is the root of all, right? Climate change, gun violence prevention, you know, grassroots activism, right? These are the issues that if you look, you know, seven generations down the road, right? If you can get a hold of this and try to look down the road, my grandchildren, what world do we want them to live in? I'm not happy with the world right now. So what we have to do is highlight the issues that really affect you, number one. Number two, understand that the people you vote for really do affect your life. And so we created, that's coming out tonight at 8 o'clock. I really hope you watch it and tell everybody and your family to watch it. We're doing a docu-concert called Do Something and Vote. And Harry's in it. Bruce Springsteen's in it. We have John Lewis's last words is read by Morgan Freeman. We have RBG in it. We have incredible music artists from Bruce Springsteen to the Black Pumas to Susan Tedeschi and Derek Trucks, the Tedeschi Trucks Band, who are just incredible. You know, I can go on, just amazing. And a young Native American artist who is an artist activist to the nth degree, who opens the show, and she's got more songs in this show than Bruce Springsteen does, but who is incredible. Her name is Rhea Zaragoza. And, you know, we just mixed, we really wanted to focus on the issues that affect young people in this country and people of color in this country.
Where can people find it?
Well, you can find it on LiveX Live at 8 p.m. Eastern tonight.
Okay.
It's free. It's free. And there's we've teamed up with Michelle Obama's When We All Vote, and there is a QR code on the screen, and you can put your camera phone up against that QR code, just focus on it, and up on the screen is a way for you to find a polling place, register and vote, and or donate to any of the charities throughout the film. And it's just a great combination of different kinds of music. It's all wonderful music. But there's a scene, a variety of different scenes. And I think the point I'm trying to make is there's two scenes in this that I find vitally important to who you vote for and what Harry would be doing today. One of them is a scene of a friend of mine whose son was murdered at Sandy Hook Elementary School. Mm. And he started Sandy Hook Promise. But in 2013, they tried to pass the background check bill. And it failed. And then Parkland happened and umpteen other different mass shootings and everyday shootings that happened all across this country. And it was because what I saw in working on that project with him was the ineffectiveness and how Congress, senators in particular, really can affect your life. We have in here John Stewart and John Feel and Ray Pfeiffer, who fought for 18 years to get their health insurance. They're 9/11 rescue and recovery workers, fought for 18 years. If you haven't seen John Stewart's...
I have.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, watch tonight what we did with that scene with John. We interviewed John in 2016, so we roll in some of our interview as well. And Bruce Springsteen's in that scene, Tedeschi Trucks is in that scene, and Nathaniel Radcliffe during John during Congress and reaming them a new you know what, the way any American would want to do. But the thought of that these heroes for 18 years have to, you know, beg Congress. And eventually in 2019, they passed the bill. but a lot of our friends died in the meantime. And you know, tune in tonight. It's uplifting. It's inspiring. Harry's in it. We use footage of Harry that we didn't use in the film, and he narrates the hunger and poverty scene along with Noreen Springstead, who's the executive director now of Why Hunger, and who's in the Harry film, and Karen Washington, who is on the board of Why Hunger. She's in this as well, and just incredible music intertwined. It's not like anything you've ever seen. It's story intertwined with music, and the songs fit the scene. So it's you know, I think you'll find it entertaining. It's 63 minutes long, and I hope it inspires people to vote and donate if you can.
Well, I absolutely will try to catch it. You had me at Black Pumas, but
I love it. Oh my, I could do a whole movie with their music. I feel like, you know, for me, that's some of their songs. The song that we use called Colors, which is in the John Lewis section, is like, for me, it feels like Motown 1960, you know, 8 or 70. It's like Marvin Gaye. It's like the song of our time. You know,
that's, I mean, well, that's my mama's house afternoon on Sundays, period. So, but yeah, I appreciate you taking the time. I really enjoyed this documentary. I'm definitely gonna, well, now I have to go and edit so I can get this out and push it today so people can hear about the concert. But yes. I think you use your skills for worthy causes. So I'm all about trying to make people find out about them.
I would love to get a copy of this. This is one of my favorite interviews. I'm blown away that you knew Catherine the Cradle versus a hip hop song, but okay, that's, you're the one person I wanted to reach with that.
And I found her. Mission accomplished. Mission accomplished. Okay. So, like, I now own the original because I was like, this song is beautiful and sad, and I'm totally turning it in my dad's ringtone just to troll him. But we're terrible children. We love our father, but we're terrible, terrible trolling children. But yeah, no, this was wonderful. I absolutely appreciate this documentary. It's one of my favorites out of the San Diego Film Festival so far.
My credo, which might be interesting for you to think about, is when in doubt, do something.
And we were singing, stand up for what's right. Don't walk silently into the night. Take my hand and we'll see us through. If you fight,
breaking through the narrative. Massive voter mobilization among the poor, and power building from the bottom up.
And until you change your direction of thinking, you might have a chance.
A woman's work, whether at home or on the job, is as important as a man's.
So here's why we're not, because these guys, because it's, there's not one of them that wouldn't do it again.
And we were cheering, stand up, stand up.
Wow, we need to vote.
Don't walk.